Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
And the other thing, too, look, broadcast media does a terrific job when it comes to moments of national crisis. I think we do. I'm not patting us on the back, but I think we do a pretty good job of informing and of getting opinion. Yes, sometimes we do over-report. Sometimes we report every little thing, and a lot of information gets confused. But I think the information gets out there, and that's when we're at our best in terms of informing. But when the situation goes on for like a week and a half, then the hysteria begins to set in. Then the competition for information and the competition for viewer kicks in, because the news has sort of settled down and the TV anchors, and let me just concentrate on television. I'm not saying radio is immune, but my God, this morning I'm seeing them, and now let's go to the floor of the stock exchange with Eddie. Yeah, the Dow is down, and another thing, and you know, the guy, you think he's a freaking puddle is forming under his airline stocks, and all these stocks are going in the toilet. And you're like, give it a freaking rest, Eddie. A terrible day today on the Dow. And I really believe, because a lot of these guys go to TV school. They go to broadcast school in like Nebraska. I swear to God, that's where it is. It's in Nebraska. You go to broadcast school and you sit down and they show you how to raise the eyebrow and move the face around. And you have to be animate on camera. You have to keep showing. It's got to be interesting, you know. So you're raising your eyebrow, you know, and the inflection. Have you ever watched them? Today, President Bush said, and the head is going all over the place, you know, and the eyes are bulging out, and because you have to keep them interested. So in other words, to keep them interested, and again, as the competition for viewer gets a little steeper, as people begin to sort of survey their choices, they have to get a little more animate, and they have to get perhaps a tad more strident, and it all just makes for, like, nerve-wracking viewing, man. And now, the bad day on the Dow. For more of that information, let's go down now to Susie. Bob, it was a horrible day with investors fleeing, you know, fleeing them, taking their money and running. The Dow plummeting. 380 points and dropping like a rock. Airline stocks, technical stocks, everything going into the crapper. You would think that the world literally is coming to an end. And when you look at that, you have to be reminded of a couple of things. What they're doing is they are competing for viewership. And they are competing for, they're competing for airtime among themselves. You have a lot of different reporters who want to get on the air. They've all got a story. They've all got a story to tell. They've all got to report the file. And there's a guy, there's a director, and there's an editor, and they're all deciding who gets on the air and who doesn't. 1-800-449-8686, the Phil Hendry Show. Here's Paul on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Listen, I've been 7 times to the Middle East in the last 4 years, but I have a comment I wanted to make real quickly about something very positive down at Ground Zero. Firemen and policemen have been sleeping in a little church that was basically untouched by most of the rubble around it, and come to find out, even the chandelier is hanging, the windows are untouched, and it's the church where George Washington prayed.
You're kidding.
No, and I find that just
wow.
A symbolic, wonderful thing.
That's heavy.
That I
now,
thought
which
the public would love to hear.
Wow, and it's a church.
And I hope, too, that you're going to be, as the historian and sharp commentary you are, and I appreciate your candor in admitting how your personal identity, along with the national identity, has been shaken in this crisis, and that you're open enough to discuss how you've shifted so quickly in some issues. And I hope, too, that you'll look up what someone brought up the other day, which is George Washington's prophecy about this nation that he had. And I hope you'll check that and verify with a historian that that did happen, and at least bring that up on the air at some point.
That he prayed in that church.
Well, that's true, too, but you can call
Washington,
the fire department and the police department.
Washington,
they're sleeping there.
Washington said in his last, in his end of whatever the hell they call the address at the very end, he said, beware of foreign entanglements. That's
right.
What he told us. He was the father of the country. He was the main man, and he said, beware of foreign entanglements. And, baby, have we got ourselves in a foreign entanglement.
Well,
big
you know,
time.
You've mentioned so many things about the countries we're dealing with, and really, there are... The intricacy of the minefield diplomatically that the president is in, and the nature of the long run of the problem, which you're touching on the issue without coming right out and saying it, is that at the end of the day, after all the smoke clears from the terrorist issue, what is going to be the real relationship that we can hope to even amass in that region?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
we got to get out of there, Paul, in my feeling.
Well, you know, I had to leave there last October because after 4 years of working on a business, it became apparent when the Palestinian-Israeli crisis came up that I was so pro-Israeli that I could not continue what I had worked on for 4 years.
Yeah, what business are you in?
We were bringing products from the Dead Sea for de-icing on highways, but that's immaterial. It was
that's
what I wanted to bring up was.
Never mind. Yeah, I'm sorry I asked. You haul salt. You have salt.
Yeah.
Yeah, salting the highways.
Yep.
Yeah, I lived in the upper Midwest when they would salt the road. Oh, okay.
But it was a different variation. It wasn't quite as.
You said products from the Dead Sea. I thought there was like sea monsters. I didn't know what you were doing. No, hey, Paul, listen, that's heavy about Washington, man. I want to check that out, and that's just kind of a cool thing. Thank you for your call. Like the church that Washington prayed in once was untouched by the rubble. Now, I don't know. Can you look that up, Mike? Look up Church Washington Prayed In Untouched by Rubble.com. Find out about that. If it's true, it's kind of cool. I'm a corny guy at heart. I think it happens the older you get. I don't know what it is. The kids have been singing God Bless America in the house. Catherine, you know, our youngest one, she's singing God Bless America because they're singing it at school, right? And she was singing in the car today as I took her to school. And so I started to sing it to myself as I pulled away from the school. And the schlub that I am, I started tearing up. And I said to myself, what is with you, Henry? Look at you. You must be getting old, man. As when I got to that part about home sweet home, I started the freaking ball. And I'm pulling out of the park and I'm going, dude, you must be just getting old, you know? I mean, what are you? Next thing you know, you're going to pee in your pants. You got to get the Depends out. I don't know what it was. But if that George Washington prayed here story is true, that church that the firemen and the police are sleeping in near Ground Zero, that Washington prayed there, that's a symbol. Symbols are important. Symbols are really important. Symbols are, Hitler understood that with the swastika, and he understood, you know, not to bring him up into this. I mean, in fact, as soon as I said it, I'm sorry I did. But you know what I'm saying? Our flag is a symbol. Symbols are important to the human race. They're not just important to America. The human race needs them, and they've been a part of our identity as human beings since we started walking upright. It seems to be something that we need. I think Carl Jung identified that. You know, the great psychoanalyst, the great psychiatrist, the great alienist, Carl Jung, he identified early on that man and his symbols were inexorably, intricately connected. And so all symbols, we wear rings on our fingers. We have earrings in our ear. These are not just like accoutrements and little ornamentations. These are symbols of who we are. We wear crosses, and we wear Stars of David, and we wear, turbans. We grow our hair long. We grow our facial hair long. So a symbol is something that people can rally around because it represents, and it's really deep, man. It's like very archetypal. So if that is true, that the church where Washington prayed was untouched by the explosion, that's like something you can lay out there to the American people and say, look at this, man, we're destined. We are a destined people. I mean, yeah, we've had a great ride for 225 years, but it's about to go on. It's going to get better because look at that. Our destiny is like so heavy that like Washington was praying in this thing and it didn't get blowed up. But it's probably bullcrap. Okay, 1-800, I'm kidding. I don't know. Find out, Mike. Look up Washington plus prayed plus blowed up. I don't know. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
And now more. on The Phil Hendry Show.
So there is a church in Lower Manhattan. It's St. Paul's Chapel is the name of it. And St. Paul's Chapel, among other things, was where George Washington prayed before he was inaugurated as president. Where here it is, St. Paul's Chapel, one of the most beautiful colonial-era churches in the country, was built in 1776. George Washington prayed there after he was sworn in as president. The adjacent graveyard serves as resting place for many prominent families. This was written before the attacks in New York. But then I saw a picture of some police officers praying in that chapel on September the 19th. Now, the only other question that I have then is how close is it to the World Trade Center? It's in Lower Manhattan. It's in the area. And was it indeed undamaged? And what am I talking about anyway? Is this worth talking about? I don't know. Stuff like that is cool in where I come from, you know, in my neck of the woods. Here is Mona on The Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Mona.
Hi, how are you, Phil?
Fine.
I just want to say I think you're awesome. My son got me listening to you. He's 23, and he said you gotta listen to Phil. I love your humor, but I really like the track you've had this last week or so. I'm just real impressed with you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I have no choice. I really don't.
You know, I just want to say that I'm just really excited, too, that we can fly our flags now without people looking funny at us, that we can pray, we can say God, we can be nice to everybody, you know, and it's changed.
Yeah, although I did honk at a guy today, but I'm kidding, I didn't. I wanted to. You know what? The other thing is, you notice how some people are still too cool to fly that flag, though? And I understand. That's all right. Some people are a little embarrassed to fly it. It seems to be a uniquely American thing to want to wave that anyway. But so long as they're sort of, so long as, all I ask of people is for them to be cognizant and recognize where we are and take it seriously and contribute in whatever way that they can. Like the president said, let's get back to living our lives. It's more than that, though. We got to do something. We got to do something a little bit more than just going back to living our lives.
A little bit more profound, I think.
Yeah, I think we got to be a little bit more aware, you know.
I also thought it was neat that you mentioned that your daughter was singing patriotic songs, and
them in school. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm old enough to remember when we saluted the flag every morning as we started school, and it makes a difference. I think it reminds us each day of the liberty that we have.
Yeah, it's cool. I think, you know, my father used to read stuff to us. Like on the 4th of July, he would read the Declaration of Independence. Now, my old man was an immigrant from Canada. He came here after World War II, became an American citizen, and he was like just total balls to the wall Mr. America. He got this big wooden carved eagle and hung it over a mantle. He made us raise the flag every day. He would, now do you kids know what the 4th of July is? Well, here, Thomas Jefferson tells us. And we're sucking our thumbs with chocolate on our face listening to 4 score and 7 years ago. I didn't know what it was. But that's kind of a cool thing to do. And you know, just remind people of, like I said, right after this thing happened, I said, hey, man, do you know where you live?
That's right.
Do you know where you live? I mean, you know, this, take a look around you. And just jazz like that. And my daughter is singing the songs in school, and so she was singing it at home. And then I started singing it to myself in the car, and then I started wetting my pants. And
I heard that. I love that expression that you use.
There you go. Okay, Mona, thank you.
Thank you so much, Phil, and more power to you, and keep singing those songs.
Thanks for calling.
You bet.
Okay, bye. Well, let's move over here to Keith on The Phil Hendry Show. Keith?
How are you, Phil?
Good, man.
I've been listening to you since Fort Lauderdale with your Brian Cox interview.
Oh, weren't those the days? You know what? I would take, if we could take, I'm serious, if I could take the pain away from the country right now and never have this happen or like it never did happen, I would let that guy sue me 8 more times. I would go through like 10 more lawsuits.
Right. By the way, that church is about a block and a half away from the World Trade Center.
A block and a half. Now, is that significant to you or am I just being corny?
No, I think it's significant to me. Actually, I heard an interviewer talk about it from the New York Times, and it just struck me deep in the heart, which is most of these things do this time of year with what's going on.
Yeah. A block and a half away, and it's untouched?
Untouched.
I think that's pretty cool. I don't know.
I think it's
some,
awesome.
Yeah, it's just, it's very cool. I don't know. I don't know what, is there anything we can take from that? Just look at that, man. It's like a symbol of something. I don't know what, but.
It's
like
meant to be kept standing.
Yeah, you know, it's just sort of like, and symbols are, that's where we live, you know. It's like, they're really important to us. All kinds of crap.
Then for a little irony here in the United States, I went today to pick up Chinese food for lunch.
Mm-hmm, and they thought you were an Arab?
I purchased an American flag from the Chinese restaurant that was made in Taiwan.
Oh, yeah. The little plastic ones?
Actually, no. They had a big, like, 3x5-foot one.
Cool.
That they were selling really cheap, and they were trying to be, you know, very patriotic about it.
Yeah, I got a bunch of those. I got a little one in my office. I think it was made in Taiwan, yeah. The little plastic ones and the other ones. Cool. Thank you. I thought you were going to say you went into a Chinese restaurant and accused them of being Islamic or something.
No, nothing like that.
Okay, man. Thanks. Bye-bye. I bet you we've got people out there who are that stupid. Why don't you... Are you involved in Islam? What are you talking about, man? I'm from Taiwan. What? Just so long as you're not no Muslim. No, man, I'm not Muslim. I'm from China. China. India. That old Muslim country? No, no, no. That's Buddhist and Confucianism, and there's a few Christians, and, you know.
What about that India thing?
Well, that's the Hindus.
What's that?
That's not Muslim. Ain't no holy war there, as far as I know. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show with Dan. Hi, Dan. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, hi, Phil.
Hi.
Speaking to, channels trying to improve...
Hello? Oh, Dan, your car phone, brother. All right, hold the line, man. We'll try to get you back. Let's move over here to David on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello?
Phil, hi, how you doing?
Good.
Just had a serious question. I like the serious topics have been taken. I was just wondering if you're going to be able to, what's your opinion on the draft? Are they going to be able to go that deep, or what's your opinion on that? Thanks.
I don't think, are you hanging up?
I just wanted to bring that up, make my point.
I'll hang up and listen. I don't think they'll reinstate a draft. Nothing I've been hearing indicates that. Are you worried about that, or?
Yeah, you know, a younger brother and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just looking at you surrounded
so,
by a young fella, single, you know? Just,
yeah, I hear you.
You gotta do what you got to do for your country, you know?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Theoretically, if a war gets broad enough and continues long enough, then maybe they decide to call people up. We're hoping that that is not the case. The way it sounds like they're going to conduct this war, it doesn't sound like that'll be the case. It doesn't sound like they're using huge amounts of people. It sounds like we're going to... wage this thing on many different fronts. The military part is just one part of it. There's going to be a covert intelligence part of it. There's going to be a diplomatic part of it. There's going to be an economic part of it. There's going to be a part of this war that we wage in the United Nations. There's going to be the military side, which I had, Dale Dye on the show yesterday, who was a master sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he said the ideal way to approach this war is battalion size, which is like 850 guys. That's not a huge unit. And right. In recent years, I've been hearing people say at the higher levels of government, the army of the future will be fought by highly mobile, small, highly mobile units. We heard that right after the Gulf War ended. Right after the Gulf War ended, I heard people say, now this is the last war of this kind you may see. What we may see in the future are the small, highly mobile, unless, of course, you're fighting, you know, you're going toe-to-toe with some large entity. And I don't want to mention any names because they happen to be allies of ours or at least friendly toward us. But let's say China. No, I'm not. I don't want to get anybody nervous. I'm just saying a large country. See what I'm saying? 1-800-449-8686. Just take a small pause here from our phone calls because I read you the Army Ranger thing. These are all the units that are going to be involved, possibly involved. This is the kind of thing we're talking about when we talk about this military operation. Then you have, I mentioned the Army Rangers, then you have the Green Berets. Now, we've all heard of them. The Green Berets are used both as a combat force to train guerrilla troops in other countries. Each member must, both as a combat force and to train guerrillas. Each member must be able to speak at least one language other than English. So if you're in the Green Beret, at least bilingual. The Green Berets are used for a variety of missions, such as unconventional warfare, whatever that is, special reconnaissance, direct action, and counter-terrorism. The Special Forces Airborne served in Vietnam, Operation Just Cause in Panama, and Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm. That's the Green Beret, and you just heard that. Counterterrorism. And then we'll read about the Marine Expeditionary Units and all that other stuff. It's the Phil Henry Show here at 1-800-449-8686. Coming back.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Now, I just saw a thing on CNN. I believe it was CNN, yeah. And one of the reporters from the State Department spoke with a State Department official and had basically talked to, let me say this right. The State Department official laid out to the reporter from CNN what Colin Powell has in mind and what Colin Powell was telling other people in the State Department what the president has in mind for this war. And the first thing that he said was, when you say the word war, it's a wrong term to use, and the administration has admitted they're just as guilty as anybody for having promoted that word. More than a war, it's a campaign. And it's going to be financial, diplomatic, legal, slow, and methodical. The military aspect is only one part of it. Now, I don't know how I feel about that. I think it's smart. When you're talking about terrorism, it's not a huge entity like another country with a uniformed army and a game plan and tactics and something we can see with a spy satellite and watch the movement of troops and monitor borders and all of the things you would do in a traditional war. This is a war against individuals that live in apartments and they live in houses and they move on buses and trains and twos and threes and most of the time by themselves, and they grab airplanes at a minute's notice and then they disappear into the crowd and they get a bus and then they disappear into the crowd. How do you fight an enemy like that with a big military invasion? Yes, I know what the president said about punishing the individuals who harbor them and give them aid, but you got to do that a lot of different ways, too. For instance, maybe a Syria you can bomb the crap out of. I think that'd be wonderful, personally speaking, wonderful. However, Afghanistan, forget it. What are you going to bomb? You ever seen how the Navy will park itself off of a deserted island and shell it? They'll practice using their artillery by shelling a deserted island. They do it off the coast of one of the Hawaiian islands. And, of course, we know all about the stuff in Puerto Rico. And that would be like just target practice on blowing up rocks. Just be sending in bombs to blow up rocks. And somebody sent me a quote, and they said Bush said this, and if he did, the guy's got a greater sense of humor than I ever thought he did. He said, "Why would I spend $20 million to blow up a 10-buck tent and a camel's ass?" Is that beautiful or what? Okay, here's Chris. Chris, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hey, Phil. Your show rocks, by
Thanks.
The way.
Thank you.
You keep talking about sending the military in as something that's going to happen. It already has. I have a friend who's a Navy SEAL. They shipped out Sunday from San Diego. At least his team did.
Well, I mean, and they moved airplanes up to the front on aircraft carriers. So yeah. But I mean, sending them into Afghanistan, I guess, is what I meant.
Yeah, they were given direct orders. We can't say where they were going for obvious reasons, but they're not just being sent out to wait on a ship somewhere.
Do you know where they're going?
No, I don't. We were given no information. Absolutely.
Well, that's pretty much as expected, because the SEALs, the Marine Expeditionary Unit, the Green Beret, Air Force Special Operations, Delta Force, Army Rangers, they say will all be involved in this operation because all of those groups specialize in counter-terrorist activity and fairly mobile operations, quick and mobile operations.
Absolutely. They'll be out before anybody even knows they've been there.
Or so the movies tell us.
I know.
Remember,
guys.
Did you ever see Under Siege with Steven Seagal? He was a cook,
yes.
But he also had that radio phone, that satellite phone.
That was the coolest thing. Of all the stuff he had, that satellite phone was the bomb.
Absolutely.
All right, man, thank you.
All right, take care.
Remember that flick he had that, like, what was that? He could call anywhere on the planet with a satellite phone? They don't even exist. They made that up. Nah, they must have made it up. You're telling me they do exist?
But they're much larger.
How big are they? Because he had one that was about the size of a matchbook. Hi, I'm here. And he's talking to the Pentagon, and he's inside the ship, and they're in the middle of nowhere. 1-800-449-8686, the Phil Henry Show. Now we move on to the Marine Expeditionary Units. What are those? They'll also be a part of this. While not technically a special operations force, the Marine advertised their expeditionary unit as special operations capable. These units, at least two of which are in the Indian Ocean, are capable of quick, compact, multifaceted military campaigns. There's another little kind of phrase we've been hearing a lot. These units generally have more equipment, logistical and technical support, weaponry, and Marines than their conventional counterparts, giving them more firepower. Their purpose is to provide the commander-in-chief an operational maneuver capability from the sea. Commanded by a colonel, one Marine Expeditionary Unit typically includes about 2,200 personnel. The infantry battalion uses amphibious assault and light armored vehicles, and the aviation unit employs helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft such as Harrier jets. So there you go. That's the Marine Expeditionary Unit, and then we have the Navy SEALs, which I'll tell you about. Thanks for getting this stuff, Mike, because I know it's probably boring the crap out of you guys, but I love it. I like reading about stuff. Look at this. Craig is about ready. He's on the floor. All right, here is Reynold? Goodbye. Where are we going now, man? Carlton, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, how you doing, Phil?
Fine, sir.
I wanted to say that I think that we should... I think that
bomb the crap
we should
out
not kill Osama bin Laden.
Okay.
I think that we should make sure not to try to go after him personally. Because I think if we do, that there's going to be 1,000 people wanting to take his place. Now, I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes last night.
Like there aren't 1,000 people right now wanting to take his place.
Right.
Oh,
right.
There aren't? You're saying that there and aren't?
I really think that...
Are you telling me that right now there aren't thousands of others out there that would be willing to... that want to take his place right now?
I think so.
Well, then you agree with me. It doesn't matter whether we kill him. There's already 1,000 people out there that would like to take his place or do his work anyway. So what difference does it make whether we kill him or not?
I think... Hello? That if we kill him, it could get worse.
Well, how could it get any worse than killing potentially 20,000 human beings by, in so inspiring an individual that he would give his own life by flying a plane loaded with fuel into a building? That guy, Bin Laden, Bin Laden was able to give money to that guy's family to induce him to do that. Because he's so wealthy, he's able to coordinate all of these things in terms of at least paying people to do such idiotic and insane and horrific things. I mean, those terrorists, their families probably got money. You see what I'm saying? So
yes,
you take this cat
Bin
Laden out of there, you take about $5 billion away from the international terrorist network.
Okay, Phil, but
yes,
what
sir.
I'm saying is instead of going after these people, go after the problem. Like, go after Bin Laden's money. Because I think if you kill Bin Laden...
How about if we do both?
I think you can stop the problem without killing him.
Why don't we do both? Why don't we do both?
Why don't we do both?
Yeah, why don't we get his money and get him?
Okay, because if you get his money and you get him, you're going to have another person wanting to do it.
But there's
but if you just get his money...
Carlton, there's the Hamas, there's Hezbollah, there are a number of organizations that are not under his direct command that are already practicing terrorism. There's already terrorists other than him.
Them. They're not as well known as Bin Laden.
Go after them, but leave him alone. Let me ask you something.
Exactly.
Do any of these guys
leave him alone?
I
think he's better off alive than he is dead.
Yeah, for him he is. Yeah, he'd probably look in the mirror and say the same thing.
Who?
Well, how's
it, too.
How's it better for us that this guy's left alive? I don't understand. I heard what you said about how his death would inspire others to become leaders. Right now, these guys are worked up to a mouth-frothing, foaming rage. I mean, they're all really inspired. This guy, Bin Laden, has got everybody so inspired. They're flying planes into buildings. By killing him, by liquidating him, terminating him, or whatever other movie term we want to use, I think you take a lot of steam out of these people because he's an organizational force. They're angry, but they need a leader. Leaders are important. They give us an opportunity to rally around a point. And without a leader, you're just a whole bunch of pissed off people pumping your fists in the air.
Right.
I know you don't agree with me, but
this is what I'm saying. Have you read The Art of War?
The Art of War?
Yes, that's a book.
Is that book I heard about, written by the Chinese guy?
Yes.
No, I ain't read it.
One of the things they talk about in there is during war is that you practice deception.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need right now. Just shut everybody else down. You can stop these guys from doing things.
Oh, I
right
see what
now.
You. I see what
and you
say.
Can go after them at the same time.
Well, let me ask you this: Do we?
You can keep him in a little corner so that. Put him somewhere that he can't move, man.
Well, let me ask you this, Carlton.
Put him somewhere that he can't keep him.
Do we kill
him in
other?
The mountains.
Do we liquidate other
Make
people?
Make him stay in the mountains so that he can't.
All right, hold on.
Anything.
I got a question. I got a question, teacher. Do we liquidate others? Do we kill
yes,
others?
If possible.
Okay.
If possible, yes.
Okay.
But don't touch him.
So your theory is make him sweat bullets as others around him drop, and he's still alive, and he's like sweating bullets, wondering when the next shoe drops.
No, I'm not saying. Make him sweat bullets. I don't care about him. I don't care whether he sweats bullets or not.
It
I'm
would
talking
make...
about what's best for us.
Yeah, well, if he's still alive, he's still conducting his stuff, although you're saying go after his money, but keep him alive.
Right. See, go after his money. Go after everybody else. Get them.
Can I give your resume to Colin Powell? Because, no, that's pretty smart. I kind of like that. It's sadistic and twisted. I like it.
Okay. It's true.
I'm telling you, I like it. I don't quite get why we don't kill him yet, though. I thought it was to make him sweat bullets. See, if you're killing all these other terrorists, why wouldn't you kill him? And you've got some reason.
Because he's the one
who's
going to really kick things off.
He's the big leader.
This guy's like Jesus to them over there, man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. See, he's
this
a leader.
This guy's like Jesus over there to them.
He
and
organized.
You know, if we had Jesus today and somebody killed our Jesus, hey, we ain't going to just sit back.
That's the truth. That's the truth. That's the truth. All right, Carlton. He's gone.
But, yeah, you can get my resume to Colin Powell.
You got it, brother. All right. Thank you for your call.
And I just wanted to say one other thing.
Yes, sir.
Love your show.
Thank you very much. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Calling. Bye-bye. The guy makes a kind of a twisted sort of sense, doesn't he? I like the sweating bullets thing, but he didn't say, no, that's not to make him sweat bullets. See, he thinks, and he's right, that Bin Laden is such a formidable presence and such an inspiring presence that they're going to go ape if he gets croaked. My philosophy is that Bin Laden is even more of a threat as an organizational entity than he is as just some sort of inspiring Jesus figure. You knock off the Jesus figure, people get nuts and they want to go to war and kill themselves and fly planes into buildings. You knock off the organizational end of that, though, and they don't know how to do it. Nobody's going to pay them. Nobody's going to train them. And you got to wait for the next Bin Laden to come along, and that guy's going to come along with or with whether the Bin Laden's alive or not. So why not just take him out and wait for the next guy to come along and cut him off at the knees? And you know. But what that guy said was, you know, take out everybody around him. And then I said, make him sweat bullets. And he said, no. And I said, well, that's a really cool thing. Make him sweat, look over his shoulder, spend the rest of his days sleeping with one eye open. That would be sick, twisted, cruel, sadistic. I like it. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
In about 7 minutes, President Bush will address the members of Congress, and I know that many of you will be watching that, as well you should. We are here. We remain on the air. We will continue with the program to the end of our scheduled time. And when you come back from that, and I understand that it's supposed to last about 30 minutes, we'll be here and you can give us a call. Tell us what you think. Now we move on here to Navy SEALs. The SEALs, which stand for Sea, Air, Land. Sea, Air, and Land. Sea, Air, and Land. Oh, S-E. Sea, Air, and Land. Are the U.S. Navy's primary and most acclaimed Special Operations Forces unit, operating mainly in tight 16-man groups. The SEALs are capable of conducting top-secret ground and water-based missions. SEALs are trained extensively and rigorously in and around San Diego, California, and Norfolk, Virginia, to withstand and, in fact, thrive in the face of personal, physical, environmental, and other challenges. They trace their history to the frogmen of World War II, although new threats, including terrorism, have forced them to evolve substantially in recent years. SEALs take on missions, many of them classified, throughout the world. Larger teams are often divided into cells, i.e. an evasion and recovery cell, or a force protection cell, a sniper cell, etc. That's the SEALs. Here's Mike on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Phil. Hi. I want you to know I'm flying my flag, but I'm a little bit nervous about the new patriotic fervor that's sweeping the country. I grew up in San Francisco and used to go to a satirical group called The Committee. It was like Chicago's Second City.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, Scott Beach and a bunch of those guys. And one of my favorite routines was they had about nine guys sitting in chairs as the Star Spangled Banner started being played on the piano, and all but one got up and put their hands on their hearts and started singing the Star Spangled Banner. And one by one, they tried to convince the guy that wouldn't stand up to stand up, and he just refused and kept his arms folded. And by the time they got to Land of the Free and Home of the Brave, they were stomping the crap out of him because he refused to stand up. And I'm worried
about
that.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
That's
very funny. Well, you're afraid of what, then, therefore?
Well, you know, I've heard people call other stations and say, I swore I would never get suckered into calling Phil Hendry because I get your show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't call Rush because I do get his. But it just occurred to me that a lot of people are saying, see, this is what we've been telling you people now. You know, it's I'm waiting for President Bush to suggest that Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson quietly leave America, and maybe Bin Laden will, you know, leave Afghanistan.
Yeah, Bush really, that wouldn't be a bad idea. That wouldn't be a bad idea. I noticed where Bush just distanced himself like 8 million light years from what those guys said last week. And they said the president doesn't feel that way. I bet you he ain't taking their calls these days.
I don't think so. And I was really relieved to hear that while he's giving his speech tonight, the president will be safely somewhere private where he can, you know, keep running stuff. I mean, Cheney.
Oh, so he's not going to Congress?
No, he is, but Cheney won't be there.
Yeah, Cheney is, this is the new security. This is
right,
the way they're doing it.
I think that's a great idea.
Thanks, Mike, for your call.
Okay.
All right, man, thank you. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. We got about a minute left in the hour, and I don't really want to take a call because I want to give people time to say what they want to say. So the president will be speaking here in about 4 minutes and or thereabouts. As a matter of fact, I think I see, yeah, there's Congress on television right now. President Bush will call on the military to be ready and the public to be calm. The Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge to be the new director of Homeland Security. There's going to be a new office, Homeland Security, and that will be the governor of Pennsylvania who'll be directing that. So that's interesting. And there was also kind of a humorous argument as to what they ought to call this military operation in the Indian Ocean. Is it Operation Infinite Justice? No, that might offend the Muslims, so they're going to have to come up with a new name. And I suppose Kick-Ass is a little too strong. Operation Kick-Ass is still, I think, it's still available. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.